Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. For our weekly book discussion, I'm joined by Arifa Akbar, literary editor at The Independent. Today we'll be discussing two books of short stories, one by the author of The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, John Boyne, and the other a posthumous collection of works by horror writer Shirley Jackson. And we'll discuss Submission, the English translation of a book by French writer Michel Houellebecq that required him to go into hiding as the devastating Charlie Hebdo attacks took place earlier this year in Paris. That's all to come here on The Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Arifa. Let's begin with Soumission, or Submission, as it will be in its English translation. This is a book by Michel Houellebecq that imagines France under the rule of a cunning Muslim leader. But before we get onto the storyline, let's talk about the release of this book in France. It was brought out on the same day that the tragic Charlie Hebdo attacks happened in Paris in January, which meant that the author had to go into hiding.
He literally ran for the hills. And you know, even now, I believe his publicity around the English translation Submission is minimal or sort of zilch. So maybe he's still running for the hills. But, you know, it touched nerves. It got the French Prime Minister to virtually apologise for this sort of strange and unpleasant coincidence, the sort of art and reality colliding too closely and uncomfortably together. But I mean, it's not as hateful as I expected it to be.
Okay.
And it's France in a sort of near future dystopia, 2022. Marine Le Pen's far right party comes head to head with the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood has sort of re-spun itself into quite a viable. It's sort of spun the Caliphate and Sharia into an appealing policy, you know, appealing set of policies, appealing enough to win over Marine Le Pen. So they get to power, they install a soft form of Sharia, and there's all these sort of echoes of collaboration and, you know, the French history of collaboration with the Nazis and sort of rolling over and submitting to this authoritarian regime. But I think what it really questions is this notion of French identity. So its main character is this terrible, narcissistic, oversexed anti-hero called François, and he works at the Sorbonne, which of course becomes the Islamic University of Sorbonne Paris. And he is just this rather nihilistic, very sort of misanthropic and quite misogynistic as well. You know, he sort of dumps a girlfriend every academic year, and they're all kind of young and tight-bodied, and it's what you expect from Houellebecq. But really, and he goes on, he sort of slightly leaves Paris and goes on the run and goes around France, and there's a sense that he's in his road trips. He's sort of searching for a France that's lost to him, the France of former glories, the France of a certain identity, the France with a religious identity as well. He spends a few days in a monastery and can't hack it and runs back to Paris. And so there's a sense that the Frenchman, there's a sort of middle-class Frenchman's angst there. Right. And I think there's a sort of, rather than interrogating, there are those racial sort of stereotypes of the hook-nosed Arab, all those binaries of the good persecuted Jew, the bad, you know, sort of Saudi and Gulf bullies in a way, who come with their petrodollars and they pour money into educational institutions and sort of win over the French in their wily ways, you know, with all these dollars. There are those stereotypes there, but I think the real hate is angled inward. It's sort of Francois is an sort of abhorrent creature.
Right.
And he is this consummate Frenchman who's lost his religion, lost his belief in everything, lost his sense of identity. And I think Houellebecq is saying, where are we? Who are the French now?
That's interesting. I mean, because I guess on the face of it, it looks like a satire focused on the Muslim community in France. But you're saying that kind of actually when you look at it, it's slightly targeted on French society, actually.
I think it's a self-interrogating sort of look at French society. Look at, are the French ideals, you know, our Republican socialist ideals crumbling around us? And if they are, what do we do now? Are we going to be, you know, in our vulnerable, crumbling state, drawn to an authoritarian political party like the Muslim Brotherhood. So it does create its own sort of rather racist dystopia, you know, sort of. But what I think is behind that is a despair around Frenchness. You know, right. What is Frenchness? Has Frenchness the sort of crisis of republicanism and the crisis of identity? And we've seen it before, but he's dressed it up rather provocatively, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, it is incredibly provocative. Mm. And yeah, France's Prime Minister has had to kind of apologise and say that we're not all intolerance, hate and fear.
Yeah.
I mean, but do you think, do you think there is this kind of clever message actually at the heart of this, rather than just being a very provocative satire? Do you think there is a deeper message?
Well, I think there's a surprise there in that Welbeck appears to be being sort of very imperialist in this sneering down and let's caricature, you know, the Islamic, already a very contentious element, you know, in France with the issues around Charlie Hebdo, the fallout of Charlie Hebdo, the issues around the veil, you know, the issues around the Banlieue and the Muslim, you know, minorities that are in the Banlieue. So we have all of this is a very contentious issue, but in the end, he's sort of turning the Inquisition, you know, in on the Frenchness and French community with its Muslim immigrant controversies and issues, but it's more than that. You know, it's really that post-modern angst, middle class angst around identity.
Right, okay.
So in one sense, it's not all that new, but he's dressed it up. And he did say that this novel was, he began it by thinking, by trying to work with Catholicism, but this is far sexier, isn't it? And I think he sort of got more than he bargained for.
Soumission is published by Flammarion, and look out for an English translation which will be published on the 10th of September. Let's move on now to a collection of short stories by John Boyne, the author of The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, called Beneath the Earth. Aretha, talk us through some of the tales that really captured your imagination in this collection.
I think they captured my imagination because he captures teenage and childhood subjectivities, you know, the voices so well. So we know him best, don't we? And I think we always will, as the author of the novel The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, about it's a sort of Holocaust childhood friendship story. And John Boyne has never really touched on Irishness before until his previous novel called The History of Loneliness. So after several novels, he finally decided to look at Ireland. And that novel was quite sort of damning of the Catholic Church and its sort of passive victims. Now, these sets of short stories are pretty dark and damning of the nuclear family, the abuses that can stem out of them, the secrets, the sexual identity that must be kept secret, the aberrations and the deviations, so-called. And in a way, you don't sit down, you know, this is not a beach read where you sit down and think, oh, this is going to be a load of fun. It's not fun, but they're really remarkable in the way they're dark, they're beautifully sort of summarised the helplessness of a victim, but a child victim. It starts off, the first short story is called Boy 19, and it's about a boy who was taken into care because his parents' marriage fell apart and they fell apart as a result. And they're sort of their abusers without quite realising it. They're so self-regarding and having their crisis, and this boy is sort of suffering for it. And he's taken into care and he's a success story. You know, he's rehabilitated. He's very bright. He's also very beautiful. But the emotional damage is sort of all quite rather invisible because he's this bright success story. He's the shining example of what the care system and social services can do. And he has this emotional deadness within, and he takes this bizarre course. He's a student and he's on course for great things, but he decides to make extra money to turn into a rent boy. And these are his encounters. It's quite a shocking, rather startling short story about the encounters that he... And then he sort of meets his mum again and she's sort of turned into an alcoholic. And it sounds dark and depressing.
It does, yeah.
And it is. In some ways, it reminded me of The Dubliners by James Joyce. And okay. And it also, you know, those short stories that are not all about the Irish blarney, they're not about barroom banter, they're not Roddy Doyle, you know, the sort of light version of Irishness, this other side. This is the side that, in a way, We have the James Joyce or Edna O'Brien or even Samuel Beckett, you know, these exiles who leave Ireland in order to escape it, but they can't because it becomes their inner landscape.
Right, okay.
And it seems like this is that Ireland, that dark island of the inner landscape. Mm-hmm. And maybe John Boyne sort of avoided that inner landscape until now, and now that landscape you see is quite a dark one. But
interesting.
Yes, yeah, but definitely recommended.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the unifying theme or concern in this is childhood and the nuclear
yes.
family.
Yeah.
How does John Boyle play with narrative voice across? I mean, are we talking about first person narratives each one?
They could be third on their first and third, but the focus is always within the mind of the child or the teenager.
Right, okay.
So it's only one or two stories where you get, you know, the last story is told. Again, very emotionally dead voice of the father and the father who's abusing his daughter. And there's an emotional deadness that sort of resembles the Rent Boy, because these both people are doing terrible acts and they don't really want to think about them. They're trying not to. They're trying to cut off from themselves. So you do have adult subjectivity, adult voices, but the strength of these stories is the child, you know, the child's suffering or the child's view of the world, the child's sense of being overwhelmed by this adult, quite dark adult world.
Right. We were discussing Beneath the Earth there by John Boyne, and it's out on the 27th of August, published by Doubleday. Finally, Arifa, we have Let Me Tell You by Shirley Jackson. This posthumous publication brings together the short, dark stories that she's known for, along with drawings, essays and lectures, most of which have never been published before. First of all, Arifa, tell us a bit about Shirley Jackson for those who might not be familiar with her work.
Well, the first thing to say is I absolutely love Shirley Jackson. I didn't know who she was, and I think anybody who picks this up will love it, will love these stories and essays and all of it. She's big. She's acclaimed and celebrated in America. We don't know her as well here. She was writing in the late 40s and 50s, and these are sort of previously unpublished or unfinished, some of them. So there's that element of the Harper Lee, you know, work in progress, and you can see how she's developing. But just for people who don't know anything about her, the first short story she wrote, she published in the New Yorker in 1948, and it was so controversial, it was such a controversial ending. It's a few pages, anybody can read it online as I did, the New Yorker got record amounts of hate mail because of this dark turn at the end. She's not just dark. So some of the stories are surreal. Some are very comical. There's lots of essays as well about domesticity, you know, the 1950s housewife, the 1950s husband. There's this brilliant, the stories are combined with essays. And she, the foreword of this book calls her the inventor of the mummy blog. But these mummy blogs are really high standard mummy blogs. They're sort of very sharp, very witty, very observational of life and people. They're sort of like Nora Ephron, you know, Nora Ephron, the screenwriter and writer in general. She's sort of capturing an era, late 1950s, on the cusp of the 1960s. So it's a sort of cusp of rebelliousness. And you get elements of that rebelliousness, the housewife who's sees the kitchen, you know, her haven is the kitchen, and she sees the cutlery and the crockery talking, and there's a menace in the kitchen, and the chaos of the family. And you get a story where a man, you know, comes home, the sort of 1950s man, he puts his briefcase down, hi honey, I'm home, sits at the dining table, eats his meal. It's only after he's eaten his meal he realizes he's walked into the wrong family home, and his is upstairs. And
right.
There's sort of silly, surreal elements there, but quite dark too. There's a story which is unfinished, and it's told in a sort of breathless voice of a teenager. And it's this teenage story here, and this teenager sort of got a girl crush on her friend Hilda, and she's saying, oh, I adore my friend Hilda, she's more beautiful than me, but she's more daring than me. And this breathlessness goes on page after page, and then it's sort of, you know, Hilda's daring, and she dares to shoplift, and she dares to answer adults back, and then it sort of takes a bit of a twist, and Hilda's planning a robbery of her house.
Right.
And it sort of ends mid-sentence, and you wish that Shirley Jackson had finished it, because it just, you get wrapped up in this beguiling, breathless teenage voice and realise that it's going someplace that you didn't expect. It's going to quite a dark place.
Yeah. I mean, she's very good at that kind of bringing subversion, basically. She's yes. very subversive. But we're in a very domestic landscape here. I mean, not like in kind of the Beat Generation, which is pretty much the same time, which was kind of travelling the entire country. We're sort of in a domestic landscape. But she manages to bring the subversive out in these.
Absolutely. And the ghostly and the macabre. So these are not, I wouldn't say these are for the women who read mummy blogs. Right. I would say this is as appealing to men as it is for women. Her novels are sort of haunted house and, you know, stories. So the novels that she put out before she died aren't chick litty or mummy blogs at all. They're sort of serious, scary novels.
Yeah.
What's so clever about this collection as a whole is that when she does scary, it's really scary. When she does comic, it's actually really funny. It's very witty. And sometimes the scary segues into something that's very funny and vice versa. So it's unexpected. She sort of reminded me a bit of Daphne du Maurier, but then with Nora Ephron chucked in too. So that's what makes her quite unique, that the voice pitches comic with the unsettling so well.
Right, I'm sure, yeah, there'll be more fans of Shirley Jackson fairly soon, I imagine.
There should be, yeah.
Let Me Tell You by Shirley Jackson is out now, published by Random House. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to Arif Akbar for joining me in the studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for this week's film review with Karen Krizanovich. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.